This is episode 86 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. This show is all about helping families to deliberately and intentionally design their family culture based on their family's vision, mission, and values. In this episode, I talked with Elizabeth Adams, and she coaches families who live in a three-generation home, which is really awesome because I recently moved into a three-generation home myself. I moved my family in with my parents, and so we are learning how to create our own family culture with my parents, my husband and me, and our children, and it's been a really fun and exciting adventure. Make sure you stay tuned to the end of this episode because I have an announcement about how this podcast is going to evolve in the future and where we're going. So make sure you stay all the way through to the end.
I want to welcome to this show today Elizabeth B. Adams, and she is the founder of the World Peace Project, LLC, creator of the Living Program, and inspiring author who helps people rediscover rewarding relationships with their families, neighbors, and faith communities. Elizabeth has taken the time to ponder some reasons our present society does not look well on our renewal of extended family living together and creating the living concept as a way to push back against the many misconceptions of what a good family life can look like. By giving a voice to those who are actually enjoying these multi-generational homes or caring for aging parents, we can see that we are not alone in our quest to be caregivers. Elizabeth is the author of Living with Mama, A Guide to Caring for Adult Children, Aging Parents, and Ourselves. She holds a master's degree in theology from Columbia Theological Seminary and a bachelor's degrees in cultural anthropology, sociology, and religious studies from Agnes Scott College. Welcome, Elizabeth. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you, Jody. I already feel like you're part of my family just talking to you a few minutes before this started.
Well, I'm so excited. And this topic, this concept of, you know, intergenerational living together, I spent a year and a half in Hawaii, like I had mentioned to you. And it's very common in Hawaii for grandparents, parents, and younger in their children to live all together and siblings. And I think it's actually more common than people realize throughout the United States. I think that it's important that we have this conversation so that people who are in that situation or people who are preparing that that situation, they know that they're not alone, that it is fairly common. I think it's an important conversation. So I'm excited to have you on.
I do too. Thank you very much.
Tell me more about how you got into this concept. Why is it such an important topic for you that you wrote a whole book about living with mama? So tell me more about how that came about.
Well, actually, I was living it. My children were graduating college and boomeranging back and forth into the house, depending on how many student loans were there, if they had found jobs after college. They always came home at summer, so they didn't have to pay any additional expenses for being at college. My mother had ended up with cancer. She had a 15-year battle with that, and boy, she was a great warrior. But in the meantime, I've now, at the exact age as my children are in high school and college, I have a mother who is ill. And so I am getting my graduate degree. I am working part-time. I am doing everything you probably shouldn't do when your children are in between those things, because I'm also staying in all my volunteer activities and all my church activities. It was like I just did so much that in reality, I was driving home. I pulled into a McDonald's to get a sweet iced tea because that'll wake you up, right? And I fell asleep in the drive-thru line.
Oh my goodness.
And the first thing that I thought when I woke up, because there was a horn honking at me, was I'm going to kill somebody. You know, it was a guy behind me. And then I realized what I had done. And I was so embarrassed because I could have hurt somebody really, really badly. And I was just trying to help everybody to the point I'd exhausted myself. The researcher in me says, let's find out what I can learn. All of the books that I found were on professional caregiving. And that is what I do anyway. But I couldn't find anything for just the regular lay person. I also knew that there were scriptures that could help you with these things. Being a multi-religious studies person, I went through all the different major faiths, Abrahamic faiths, and found out what was working and what wasn't working. And then I made a big group of friends who are doing this. And we would get together and say, what's working, what's not working, and how do I not throw my mother out of a moving car on the way to the next doctor visit, right? So there was a lot of fun and a lot of laughter and a lot of tears. And then we learned how to do this together. Because, you know, to your point, there's 65 million Americans right now living in multi-generational homes. Wow. We don't talk about them. And I think we don't talk about them because really what we see on TV isn't real life. It's not the odd creeper uncle in the basement, even though I'm sure there are. The majority of people are just honest, hardworking people that need financial or emotional help. That's all.
Wow. That's, like I mentioned, this is something that I haven't actually gone public telling people about, is that we're looking into this situation ourselves, that we're going to be moving in with my parents. And so it's like, this is so applicable to me, because I just think this is going to be so interesting that even though my parents are still, you know, they're still independent and it's not like they need our help, we're going to live with them for our own stability. You know, it's something that I'm realizing that it's okay. Like, it's a common thing and people do it all the time. I had, and like you said, this boomerang thing of the adult children, that has happened a lot to my parents too. I have 6 siblings and at least 3 of them have moved back home at some point in their adult life. And so it's normal. And now my sister has adult children and, you know, she's experiencing this type of this drama of what it's like to have adult children, and it's complicated and it's difficult. And she's like, sometimes she's telling me, I think it's a little bit harder than when I had little babies. Like, agree with me, I'm going, I don't know, but we'll see.
It's a different kind of hard. But it's equally as hard.
It's normal though. You know, it's like there's so many people that are experiencing this. And I think a lot of people get up to that point in their family life and they're going, how do I do this? I have no idea. Like, it's just not something that, at least in my stage of life, I don't see a lot of it because I'm still in the younger phase of life. What are some of the main challenges of these people in this phase of life, either with adult children or caring for their parents? Maybe you want to take those individually.
I'm thinking about your demographics as an audience.
Yeah. And
I'm assuming that most people in your audience are either living with their parents right now, thinking about living with their parents, and they are adults. So if I'm going to pick the very, very hardest thing, I've interviewed hundreds of hours of people. How do you pick the hardest? I think is going in and keeping the same roles that you had until people break. And what I say by break is this. This is just an example of one of my clients. She moved in after a divorce with her 2 children to her parents' home. Her parent and her both sold their home and they joined a home together. They both thought, you know, that way it's more even. It's more, you know, a brand new start for both of them. You know, they had all these great plans and they really did have great plans. And they really did work out a lot of situations so that these 2 families would work together as adults, because everybody really was adults, even the children. They were high school boys. What they didn't think about then were the siblings that weren't living there. And you know how you go home at Christmas or Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or whatever, and you go home and everybody kind of falls into the firstborn, secondborn child thing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden mom is cleaning up after one, but not the other one, because the other one's got an attitude about mom cleaning up after the one that's not cleaning up after this. I mean, the family dynamics just go nuts. That's why there's all those great movies, right? On why you don't go home for Christmas. Right? I don't have that family. Luckily, we really, really, really have been able to work together on this. But people in their 30s and 40s have really just started identifying who they are as adults, really. Mm-hmm. Psychologically, socially, financially, your role, it happens at your job, and who you are at your job is so different than who you are when you visit your parents. What you've got to do, the big thing to this, is deciding who you can be in the space and not lose your identity as a child and not lose your identity as an adult. And that takes a lot of conscious thought. So I've just laid a heavy one on you.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Go ahead. Yeah.
One of the things I've done in my book, Living with Mama, is at the end of each chapter, I present a case study. And then I give you some strategies to exercise and try that might help you with these situations. For example, I believe that to have joy in your family, you have to be very conscious of it and you have to work towards that goal. A friend, a colleague of mine, had moved home with her parent and she didn't feel like it was her home. She didn't feel like she could set things out for her. She felt like she could only leave things that were her parents' things out. And she wasn't comfortable, but she was more uncomfortable talking to her parents about it. And if you're too uncomfortable to talk to your mother about how you want to put out your crock pot, there are bigger issues here. And I suggest family counseling, because it's not about the crock pot, is it? No.
Right. No, it's your ability to communicate and set boundaries and figure out where you stand in your relationship, really.
And accept that your parents are adults without being your parent. That's a big light bulb right there. If you could treat your mother as another woman that you live with, you have automatically changed your relationship, because you're going to treat her kinder. You're not going to expect her to clean up after you or your dishes or whatever. Yeah. And as a mother, I have to look at my daughters as, oh, well, you know, you're a 30 some odd year old woman. I certainly don't have any business telling you what you should wear or what time you should come home. And these are communication skills that we had to learn with each other.
Wow.
I'm already
like trying to picture all of this in my mind because, you know, I have a really good relationship with my parents and they've come to visit us often and we've been able to grow a lot. Ever since I was a teenager, my parents, we would sit and talk about self-help programs and books and things like that. As an adult, we do that even more so, especially as my parents listen to my platforms and things like that. And they're impressed by what I'm doing. And I'm picturing this in my mind going, but how is this going to look in real life? Yeah. Of how we are actually going to sit down and have these dynamics. I know that my mom, she naturally falls into mothering because she has been in that role ever since she was a teenager and cared for her siblings, her young siblings. She's the oldest of 9 children. Her oldest is only 2 years younger than her youngest sibling. She has been in a mothering role for as long as she can remember, it seems like. I know that when we move into their house, and we're doing the exact same situation, it's so funny listening to you because they were both selling our houses and we're moving into a new house. So that was so interesting to hear you say that because I'm like, wow, that's exactly us. It's even still, I can see my mom falling into this role of being a mother. But at the same time, I can also see her when she's stressed out by her trying to figure out this balance between grandmother, mother, and herself, mm-hmm. that she will just end up retreating a lot. Like she's the type of person that will just retreat whenever she feels that dichotomy and that stress. The house that we're going to be moving into, hopefully, it has like a place where she'll be able to go. Like the master suite is
good.
It's like a nice suite where she'll be able to go and retreat. It's like her sanctuary for my parents. Nice. So is that a good idea? Like, is that something like, how do parents, grandparents address these different roles so that it can achieve that balance and that level of communication without completely losing your mind?
There's something that I had to learn, and they're two very important words, and I'm constantly relearning these words. I have to learn to say, I need. That's very simple. Mm-hmm. That's not manipulative. That's not controlling. What I can say is what I need, and then how the people in my home or in our home respond to my need is based on how they hear it, or how they're willing to accept it, or whether they don't want it at all. And then I have to learn to accept they might not hear it at all because that's not where they are. Let me reiterate with that. It's hard to learn to say I need, because most of the time we don't know what we need. We know what we want. We know what we wish. You know, we wish we all had trust funds. We were trust fund kids who could live in a compound. Yeah, but that's not anybody really reality, other than they say it is on TV. I had to learn to say I need. For example, the reason why I was in the car asleep was because I'm a mother or I'm a caregiver and I was doing everybody's needs. And I fell asleep. So what I had to do was narrow that down and not say, oh, I need to stop taking care of everybody. What I needed to do was say, okay, what do I need so I don't fall asleep in the car? That's so simple. What do I need to do so I get more rest? That's simple. Okay, well, why don't I do those things is my next question. Why don't I do the things that are there? For example, the reason why I was in the car is because I had driven 300 miles to my mother's house, which I'd done every month for 10 years. To clean her house because she was going through chemo again. And I wanted her to have a clean bathroom to be sick in when I wasn't there. I wanted her to have meals in the refrigerator. She owned her own business. She was still taking care of herself financially. I wanted her to have what I wish was my love when I'm not living in the same house with her at the time. And to step back and see, I just wanted my mother to feel like I loved her when she was sick and I wasn't there. Well, what are the other things I could do that don't make me so tired? And then I'm not so emotional. Then it's not like, oh, I can't do it all. Well, nobody can.
Right.
Well, what can I do here of that need? I need my mother to feel like I love her even when I'm not there. And I had to reorganize those thoughts. And I stopped driving every single month to do that. I made it so that her house was clean. I made it so that she could have those things, but I didn't have to do them.
So if she was so, you know, financially well off, you could arrange to make sure that there was somebody to come clean her house, maybe?
Exactly. Well, she wasn't. And so I had to think of bargaining things to do. I'm a counselor. I'll counsel somebody to clean my mother's kitchen. I don't mind bartering. I don't mind. I had a friend, we were exercise buddies, and what we would do for each other is if the one didn't walk, then it was our job to clean the other one's kitchen because we both hate cleaning kitchens. I'll barter anything to get things motivated.
This is so interesting. Well, I just had a couple of interviews that were about boundaries that I think are an important thing that, you know, my listeners, if you haven't listened to those episodes, go back and listen to those boundaries and establishing those things, because I think that we often allow ourselves to be the martyr. We often allow ourselves to become, you know, resentful when right. we don't become clear. And then that begins the your relationship deteriorating.
Exactly.
And I just think that it's, you know, it's so important that we are able to have those conversations to say, I need, mm-hmm. because that is establishing boundaries and not allowing yourself to get to the point where I'm just going to become resentful. And then everything starts to fall apart. You're miserable. And then you get to the point where you're just going to quit. Or what? Where do you go from there? You can't give up.
Let me tell you that I believe boundaries is a good but kind of overused word today, because it's what you are saying. A lot of times boundaries become these obstacles instead of communication. It's like, no, I will never do this and you will never do that. And those words, if you remove those and start using the word I need, then you still allow communication. For example, I told my daughter who was living at home, I was going through finals in grad school. I was doing my thesis. I was about to lose my mind. And the one thing that drives me nuts is animal hair. And I would sit on the couch with my dogs and her dogs and all the animals that we have. And I would get up and my slacks would be covered with hair. So I said to her, I need you to vacuum at least once a week. It's not enough for me to do it. And I can't do it as often as I used to. I'll vacuum once a week. You vacuum once a week. Dad will vacuum once a week. And then I won't have any of these hair problems. She didn't vacuum once. She was also in college. She was also working full time. She had other things that she needed to do. That wasn't a priority. Now I had to then learn, okay, that suggestion didn't work. What else can I do? And not be mad at her because she couldn't meet that need. That isn't where she was. That's your next skill with the I need. If you really need it, what can you do to get it? If you can't get it, then let's figure out a way not to need it. Because we're talking about a vacuum, for goodness sake. We're not talking about feeding homeless children on the street. That's different. I went there because you've been a missionary. I've been a missionary. You know, that's not something you don't just pass up. That's a real need that is different.
So saying like, I need this thing, but then weighing out the other person's needs.
Exactly.
And figuring out how to either compromise or come up with a different solution.
Exactly.
The problem.
Now, I'm making this sound easy and I'm making it sound simple. There's a lot of emotions, but there's a lot of reflective writing and reflective learning that I highlight. One of the things that I've done with Living with Mama, but if you go to livingwithmama.com or worldpeace.com, I've put up all kinds of free resources. Just use them for self-care. Just get up there and use it all. So you can learn to write reflectively or meditate within the spirit or just enjoy, okay, my pants are covered with hair. Now, how do I still go to work and write my paper and not want to rip my eyeballs out? That sounds very violent, but that's kind of the way I felt.
You can stock up on those roller thingies that can clean your hands. So you mentioned that word self-care, and that's another one of those buzzwords that I feel like everybody talks about. But how does that fit in with having, you know, living with your parents? How do we get that? How do we establish it?
I think they're going to change depending on the age of your children, depending on the needs of your parent. Let's say your parent is ill and you're having to drive them to a lot of doctor's appointments. This script is huge. The easiest one, the absolute easiest one, is to schedule 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes at night, no interruptions. And when I say no interruptions, that means the children know this is mommy's time. I had a little space that I would sit and they knew if it was an emergency, if they were bleeding, yes, you can come to mom. But if it's something they want, they have to give me that 15 minutes because that's respect. And they would see me and they would walk away because they knew that was my spot to have my 15 minutes. And then do it in reflective time or do it in meditation or do it in prayer or do whatever you want to do. But that is your time always. And it's hard to save it, but it makes all the difference in the world.
Those little things matter. I think that that's when we write them off as they don't matter. That's when they don't happen. And then we miss out on that. But knowing that even the little things matter, you give yourself space and time for those things, it makes such a big difference.
Exactly. And I'm a firm believer in enjoying the journey. I just went on a week and a half vacation with my daughter and her three children, all under the age of 7. And we did 3 different stops, everything from amusement parks to the Capitol. We had a ball, but boy, that van got really small after day four. Because, you know, you drive another 4 hours and you stop and have an adventure and then you drive another. I still had to find my 15 minutes so that I could be a very fun grandmother.
Yeah.
And I had to find my daughter's 15 minutes so she could still be a very fun mother. You know, okay, honey, you have breakfast alone. I'll take the kid. We both know we need that to charge so that we could be fun for everybody then the rest of the day.
I like how you've given us some really good like dialogue for how to address our needs, you know, saying, I need this, I need 15 minutes. And then also advocating for another person by saying, how can I help you with your needs, exactly. Perhaps, you know, I think that those are really crucial strategies for going into this kind of a situation because it can be so unique to us individually that we have to be willing to have an open mind to allow space for things that feel unusual or things that are not necessarily scripted out for us, you know, and being able to say, well, this is what we've done, but it's not working anymore. Let's talk about for now going forward here. How do we rewrite or, you know, talk about the things that were normal for our roles, for our standards, you know, things that, you know, maybe even growing up in our parents' house as kids, but then living together as adults,
right.
There's just different standards, different guidelines, different rules, different roles. How do we establish that? How do we come together to rewrite those roles?
Well, just a little bit that I've known about you from listening to a couple of your podcasts and what we're talking about right now, I think you're very confident when you feel what's best for you. I heard you talk about how don't use the phone as the pleasure center to your brain all the time. Right? Let the phone move aside. And in that 15 minutes, I didn't have a phone with me. It couldn't buzz. It couldn't interrupt me. Nobody's time was as important as mine was in that 15 minutes. It all went away. This was my recharge moment. Well, my two-year-old did crawl in my lap, but I love that. That's different. That's like a kitty cat, right? You want the cat in your lap. So having said that, I think that if you're taking them one at a time, instead of letting them build up, then you're not going to have the issue. My daughter and I have we both love her children intensely, but she's the mother. And she makes all the decisions and I'm just a helper. If she's not in the home, I make all the decisions. And the kids know this. My yes is yes. My no is no. My daughter's yes is yes. My daughter's no is no. And then she reminded me, we were on a vacation together and I was tired and one of them was whining and I was like, here, take this. And she's like, you can't do that. Oh, you're right. I can't. Now I wanted to crawl under a rock and die because when you're 30 some odd, your daughter points out something that's very fundamental to you and you still broke it. That means we have a great relationship because she could tell me that's not who we are. And you're right.
Wow. Yeah. I can see that happening where it's like, okay, you got to figure out who has that authority, hierarchy almost of authority to the grandkids. You know, you don't want them going to mom. Mom says no. And then, you know, like in a normal family, it's mom says no. Oh, well, let's go to ask dad. Dad said no. Oh, let's go ask mom. You know, and then it adds this other layer of dynamic where it's like, well, mom and dad said no. I'm going to go ask grandma.
Exactly. You know? When my children were growing up, they would ask me, usually they come to me first because they go to dad and dad would say, what does your mom say? Because he was smart. He knew that probably meant I said no. So what did your mom say was always his response. If they hadn't asked mom, he would say, go ask mom or I'll talk to her. And the same thing happens with me and my children. I would say, have you asked your mother? You haven't? You need to ask her first. And you know, this is 7 years of that with our oldest granddaughter and she still tries it. It's just what children do, right?
That's so fascinating. So as you were talking about it too, I was thinking about what I'm trying to accomplish with my platform here, with my podcast and my message is that a lot of times I think we can resolve the ambiguity of expectations and things when we sit down and we establish the values and the vision that we have for our families. And it's interesting to me to think about that extra dynamic of also including our parents or grandparents into that discussion. I think that it would be a lot easier when everybody understands what our core values are. But I think that it's so important to come together and discuss some of the core values that you base your answers off of. You know, and then it's like, you understand, but a core value in this situation would be mom and dad have the direct authority over those kids. Everybody needs to understand that, you know, if grandma and grandpa go, I didn't know that. I thought because I'm the grandma and grandpa, we have the authority. It's our house or, you know, it's something like that. Then that becomes an issue. That becomes a problem when
and
the core value is
children, doesn't it?
Right.
It's really hard for the kids because let's be honest, I've had more than one boss at one time. It's the worst job in the world because they're going to tell you different things. And it was probably the worst job I ever had.
That would be very confusing. So I think that that's really, it comes back to establishing the roles in the home, establishing those core values. And then ultimately, what is the purpose of here living together here? You know, what is our objective of being able to raise healthy children? But there is an objective. So being able to come together and discuss what that is.
One of the core objectives in my house has for 30 some odd years been, let's look at the core virtues or the core gifts. Peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. I looked at definitions of what those words mean. I used that definition of, okay, am I being peaceful? Because the word peaceful isn't absence of war. That's not what it means at all. It actually means a wholeness of self, a wholeness of body. Am I being peaceful in this situation? I'm not. So what can I do to get there? And when I get peaceful, the family gets peaceful. And when I get joyful, the family gets joyful. It is contagious. And if there isn't what I'm going to call the negative ninny in the room, they can really pollute the whole room. Okay, you can't change that negative ninny. You can change who you are in that situation. You could walk out of the room. You could go somewhere. You could do something so that you could stay in a positive space and not bleed over into not being peaceful. Because that is my, that's who I am at my core. I want to be a peaceful person.
You know, that's family culture. That's culture. Yeah. In general. And I think that that's, you know, being able to establish that feeling in your home. But also, I think that it's important to address the negative nanny, you know, like, okay, you're disrupting the peace, and maybe saying what's going on and are your needs not being met?
A five-year-old who's hungry and tired. I'm not saying get over it, child. I do, to your point, address that need. But if that becomes your platform of how you're getting attention, I'm not going to pay attention to that. This is not your platform for attention. This is a house of peace. Let's figure out another way to get attention.
That's so cool. I know that we're talking about like living with grandparents and, you know, parents and moving in as adults, but I think this is even applicable no matter what your situation is. I mean, we really want to establish that a household where our kids feel safe, where we all feel safe, where we feel like we can grow and communicate and establish the roles and standards that will allow us to thrive. And so I think that this is such an important message, but then applying it to that extra layer of, oh my goodness, living with my parents, it makes it that much more real. I think that when it's our own children, we're going, okay, I don't really know what I'm doing, but my kids are still so resilient and flexible that, you know, this is like our experiment with becoming a thriving family in a way.
Yes, it is.
But when you're an adult and you move in with your parents, it's almost more, you know, it's like when they're little, you're going, this is the space where they can make mistakes. This is the space where they can struggle because the repercussions are minimal, right? Like we can learn and we can discuss, and we as adults, their parents are mirroring to them how to respond to negative situations and they're learning. But I think once we become adults and we're moving with our parents, it's almost like it's a bigger risk that we're taking. I think it'd be a good idea to come at it as this is an experiment, but the consequences are bigger in a way. Does that make sense?
I think that they can be. I'm not disagreeing. I think they can be. But imagine how sacred it would be in your home if even adults were allowed to make mistakes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
There's a sacredness in that. Because, for example, my mother and I were absolutely best friends. Absolutely best friends. And we are close enough that sometimes she would be so ill, I would have to help her bathe. And there's really nothing more sacred than bathing a sick mother. There just isn't. And I'm so grateful I got to do that. But if I would have jumped on her every time she was making a mistake with me, because she was making mistakes with me because she had never died. You know, her mother had been gone for years before she was dying. So she was making mistakes that were really making me angry. And I had to work on me first so that I could then walk that journey with her.
Yes.
Sacred then. And when our parents are aging, they're losing so much. They're losing their sight, their hearing, their jobs. It's a space of loss. And sometimes, you know how it is when you lose things, you get angry. And so you might snap at somebody or you might have one of those days where you just want to be miserable. Well, okay, I will give you today. It was a mistake day. Done. Over. I gave you today. Now let's go on with tomorrow. And that went a long way between me and my mother as she walked that final path, because we could have been angry at each other, or we could have enjoyed the journey together. And I preferred to walk the journey together.
Wow, I'm so glad you said that, because I agree so much. Like, we as adults, we are still learning. And then yes, our parents are going through, you know, this end of life cycle. I can't even imagine. My mom's parents are in their 90s, and she's watching them mentally and physically deteriorate. And then she's thinking, oh my goodness, that's going to be me in the near future, or, you know, things like that. And gosh, I can't even imagine the struggle that that would be. And to just go into the situation expecting your parents to be perfect or have things figured out, that's just not a realistic expectation.
It's
but I love
fair.
How you said that. No, it's not fair at all. I mean, we don't have it figured out as their adult children.
And how about if we treat our parents as fairly as we treat our children?
Right.
That would be a little different.
Wow.
I was a lot more patient with a 5-year-old than I was with my mother in her 60s. And it took me a while to realize, ooh, this is about me. I need to get more patient with this woman. She hurts right now. And yeah, I get it. I do too. I'm tired. But I would definitely be more patient with a 5-year-old than I am with her. And that's my fault.
That's definitely one of the things that I advocate, is like, as we need to work on ourselves before we start pointing fingers. And I think that this is such an important concept, because if we are moving in with our parents and they're aging, whether or not they're aging, we have to learn how to advocate for them, for our children, and for ourselves. And we cannot advocate for them if we're being insensitive about their needs.
Right. So what do I need? I need my mother not to yell at me. I need that. I don't do well with yelling. So do I talk to her like that when she's yelling? No, that would be silly. So how do I talk to her so that I can get that need met? We had a sit down, and I explained to her with a counselor, not with just me, and I'm professionally trained to counsel people. We pulled a third party in, and I said, I need this. I know you're hurting, or I know you're angry, or I can't imagine it because I'm not experiencing what you're experiencing. But I can't be yelled at. It deflates me for the whole day. I'm sorry. And she heard me. And we found other ways to work around that, because she still needed to vent. She still needed to get out some of this angst that she was feeling.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that with me, because then that ruined our relationship. And I couldn't be impatient with her. One time I was so silly. I was like, look, you've got to call the doctor and get a higher prescription of oxycodone, because if you don't, I'm going to start using it. I mean, that's how mad I got at her. What a horrible thing to say to your mother. Now, later we have laughed. We laughed about it. And we, you know, we have all
reconciled
inappropriate ways of communicating. But we were able to talk about it later, because I was able to see, okay, what do I need? I need to never be yelled at. It's just not my thing.
So that's fascinating too, because another thing that comes to mind is you and your parents are now modeling for your children that kind of like healthy communication.
Exactly.
And ways to resolve conflicts. Mm-hmm. And because they're seeing, oh, adults have conflicts. Adults have issues, you know, and here we are modeling for them that what to do, how to deal with that. That's good. Inspiring. Well, thank you so much. No, this is wonderful. And I'm so thankful that you have been able to do this research, do these interviews, talk to people about these things, because we need mentors. We need people who can mentor us and counsel us through these challenges. And every family has different challenges, but it's good to learn that this particular challenge is not totally unique. It's something that people are experiencing. And, you know, we can look to other examples and mentors like you to guide us through these kinds of situations. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, I'm very honored. I don't see myself as a mentor, just a survivor of a lot of fun.
How can my audience get in touch with you and find your resources?
Again, you can get Living with Mama, A Good Person's Guide to Adult Children, Aging Parents, and Ourselves at any of your bookstores. If they're not at the bookstores, then ask them to stock them for me. Thank you. You can also order it at Amazon, and you can go to livingwithmama.com, and that'll take you right into my website.
Awesome. And you're on social media? Are you on Facebook? And
I am. You can get access to the Facebook groups and all of that right there. Just click right in.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for joining me with this episode. I really enjoyed listening to Elizabeth and all of her tips and ideas for living in a 3-generation home and learning how many people out there who are in that situation. So if you're a parent living with your kids and grandchildren, or if you live with your parents and kids, I hope that this episode was helpful and beneficial to you. Now I want to make an announcement. Thank you so much for staying through the end of the episode so you could hear my announcement. There's some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that the podcast that you know and love, the Home and Family Culture Podcast, is being retired. So I have 2 more episodes with guests lined up for you after today. And then I have 1 more that will be the announcement for my new podcast. That's the good news side. I have a new podcast that I'm launching called Our Modern Heritage Legacy Secrets. On that podcast, I will have guests come on and tell their story about starting a business, growing a business while prioritizing their family and how they've been able to do that. And so they are deliberately and intentionally building a legacy with their family, with their business that they can be proud of. So make sure you look out for that announcement of that podcast officially launching on December 2nd. You can find me on Facebook at Family Culture Podcast. So facebook.com/familycultureproducts. It's the same handle on Instagram as well. You can also find my personal profile, facebook.com/JodyChafee. While you're there, make sure you request to join my Facebook group. It's at facebook.com/groups/familycultureStrategies. Inside of that group, I will be hosting giveaway competitions and free downloads, and I will be adding exclusive content for my guests inside of the group, exclusively inside of the group. You won't see any of that content anywhere else. And I will also be hosting Family Culture Strategies masterclasses every month. And I'll be also hosting a Friday Q&A session with me. So I hope you'll come in and join the group. It's going to be really awesome. I really want to build a community and a movement around having an intentional family culture, because our family culture is everything. It's who we are. It's our legacy. I want to help you build that legacy of a family that is unified and strong and built on trust and innovation and creativity and all of those things that create a thriving family culture. So please come check those things out. And remember, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.